This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change, max 1 offer per account.
Round 3 has come and gone, and with it came some chaos, and some of us climbed that chaos like a ladder, and some of us got burned. Let's go!
Just done it from nowhere. First in the goal from inside the team. Sheed from the boundary. Dusty.
G'day and welcome to the Ball Boys AFL Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, Mitch Casey, and you can find me on Twitter at Ball Boys Fantasy. And I am joined once again, round 3 of the footy in the back rearview mirror. I'm joined by Luke Rogerson. How are you, mate?
Good, mate. Good. What the people didn't see is you getting trash talked off camera after your little intro sequence. You can't see it, but right out there, Ellie, my sister, and Mitch's partner is trash-talking about his arrogant info.
Oh,
arrogant
she just intro. Was asking if I wrote it down because it was that well delivered. and the answer is yes.
I thought I heard her say, pull your head in.
Well,
but you've got a lot to be happy about this week.
I'm a bit up and about. I've just turned 30, and I feel as though I am wiser for it. You know, age and experience has... You know, it's taught me some things, Luke, and so I think it's all up from here now, mate.
Oh, well, it was certainly up on the weekend. Tell us how you went.
Yeah, so we'll go through the scores. I managed to score a 2001, which, look, I was pretty happy with to crack the 2K. It actually was a round rank of 129, which I'd have to go back and look. That might be my highest round rank I've ever gotten. So
when you go 20,000 positions in one round,
took me from 24,000 all the way up to 3,210.
The number's so low, we can't even read it.
So yeah, up 21,000 ranks. By far my biggest jump of all time, and it is pretty much exactly where I was this time last year. Took a little bit of a different way to get there. Last year, I went 23K to 7-3. This year, I went 32, 24, bang, straight to 3. So
I'm glad you did too, mate, because it was starting to get a bit sketchy there that your head was just slowly starting to deflate, but the weekend sorted that out. So
it's back up.
Given our teams are still pretty similar, I had a good week as well. At 1925, not quite as good, but it was enough to climb 16,000 odd ranks, and I'm now
16,000.
Still outside the top 10K, but I'm trending in the right direction.
You do that
now.
Again, you're the number one.
God, I'd be the number negative something, would I? But 11,860 as it stands.
Yeah, so look, I think the lessons here just goes to show that you can have a horrible, horrible round, but it might only be one or two rounds away for you to sort of bounce back. The flip side, you know, can't get too high or too low in this game because you could very easily, you know, have just as bad of a round. So as much as, you know, you give me shit, try not to keep, you know, let it go too much to my head. But let's go into our first segment of the day where we're going to talk about some camels and some sponges for the week. Who have we got?
Oh, sorry. Got the wrong thing up here.
Bogs and flogs. No, we'll go camel first.
The camel. My hump. Pop and lock it. Favorite part of a Monday.
So the camel goes to a player that I was keen on in the preseason. Ended up fading him because he you know, had an interrupted preseason. But I don't think that can be the excuse here. Bailey Dale gets the Camel of the Week award. I don't know. Do you call it an award when it's a negative thing?
An award.
He 63 points. When we wanted some defenders, a lot of people were trading out Perryman. We were saying, go to the top, and every one of the other defenders went off. We'll talk about a few of them some later, but Sinclair, Wang, Whitfield, Zorko, Holmes, all went great. And this guy puts up a 63. yeah, just absolutely not good enough here.
Not ideal. I mean, there was probably some more Camelly behaviour, but we felt like we couldn't give it to Horn Francis 2 weeks in a row. But he's
on notice.
He'll cop a drive-by in a second when we get to Blocks and Flogs. Let's flick it over to the sponge of the week. So somebody who was just soaking in the points.
I will say also...
Who lives in a pineapple under the sea?
SpongeBob SquarePants!
Absorbent and yellow and porous is he?
Don't be talking through my music.
Yeah, my
thanks.
bad. I will just say, Ballydale, 3 kick-ins to Lockie Bramble's 5. Ooh. That is camel behaviour. Get some of those kick-ins, Ballydale. But who gets the Sponge of the Week this week, Luke?
Sponge of the Week, this guy started like an absolute house on fire.
You're pulling your hair out.
Jack too. Sinclair could not get away from the football.
No, he actually could not avoid it.
There were points where I don't even think kicks were intended for him, and he managed to somehow find his way into a plus 6. And
career high, I think they said, 40 touches.
Hey, I'm pretty cool-headed and don't carry on too much, but this one got me going.
No, yeah, because we had the choice this week, right? Yeah. Between the two Saints boys. They were the top two targets when it came to defender targets.
And my foolproof rationale for trading in Wang was... He's got a better name. You can make more jokes with Wang than you can with Sinclair. So
still
I thought,
true, by the way.
It is still true. So I've still got that. But Sinclair was everywhere and Wang started slowly. I'm not going to say it leveled out because I'd still prefer Sinclair scored this week, but it didn't hurt as much. Wang got going in the end.
Yeah, he did. And I did have Sinclair higher on the big boys. So, you know, we sort of could see this coming a little bit, but... Yeah, I think both were good options last week, and they, you know, I think especially Sinclair rewarded those with the instant hit of sugar. Let's talk about Balls and Flogs.
And the winner of the Norm Smith Medal.
You're an embarrassment to what you do, mate. You're an embarrassment.
You really, really are missing out on these sound guys, man. I get to hear them every week. You've taken the headphones off, and you are just lesser for it.
You could definitely stitch me up by just not saying anything after they finish.
Well, you know what I thought with my humps before? I thought, I'll just keep dancing as long as I want.
He
won't know what's going on.
But let's talk about Essendon versus Port Adelaide. We're going to start with the best on ground, who I think will be the number one trade in player this week, and I think rightfully so, but Christian Morais.
Murray Erasmus,
he was just the eye test. He passed the score test, 93 points, 27 touches on his second game, 7 marks as well, was the fourth highest scorer for Port Adelaide in a loss. So he gets the best on ground for us, and I think he has put his hand up as a very likely target for us to trade in this week. Who gets the flog?
The flog in this one, I mean... I alluded it to before. Jason Horn Francis. I could rant and rave. I could rant and rave, but I won't.
Saved it. Oh. Absolutely saved it. 38 point last quarter.
Sometimes the sicko in me would prefer just it to get even worse. When it's going that bad, give me something more to whinge about. It's disgusting.
Kicked a goal?
Nah, it's disgusting. It's now far worse than the Brayshaw-Dawson decision. The Horn Francis Rankin decision is just the worst decision that anyone's ever made, myself included.
Oh, dear. Okay. Let's go on to Carlton versus the Western Bulldogs. Bit stiff not to get it, but Davidson, 125, a little shout-out here. But I wanted to give a special mention to Tom Liberatore, who... I dismissed in the preseason.
You do every preseason.
But he would have been one of the best starting picks if you went there. 142, 11 tackles, 30 touches, kicked a goal, got 6 marks as well. He is now averaging, I think, a cool 120-odd or something like that. And he is still priced under $1 million. But I want to say he was the top scorer of the round. Just absolutely lights out game from Libba in this one here. And big shout out to him. And the small percentages of coaches who have him in their side, he would be an excellent point of difference at this stage.
It's definitely a hard one to pick. It's one you can see coming because you know that the Dogs have got players out. You know he's going to shoulder more of the load. But
what's going to happen when they...
It's hard to pick a let's call it a premium at that time of year when you're just not sure if they've got an expiry date.
Yeah, I think I've got to throw out this over 30s rule because Zorko last year, Libba now,
Big Maxi Gorn still gets it done.
I started Max Gorn, but, you know, ruck's a different story. But maybe this over-30s rule is a bit too simplistic, and I'll have to revisit that in the preseason next year. But who gets the flog?
Fraser Crane.
Yes.
Fraser Crane has, I'm not going to say been a trap, but...
I think he has.
For people that traded him in
last week, after round one. Before. He goes 100, then he goes 75, I think, and then a 63. That is not good enough.
It's trappish.
It's very trappish, and... his role is not what I want it to be. His third quarter, I tuned in. I was late. I was out having my very nice steak. Awesome steak, by the way. Rich and Rare, for anyone who's in Brisbane. They're not sponsoring this, although they should. Came back, last 5 minutes of the third quarter. Maybe last 4 minutes of the third quarter I've seen. And I've seen, oh, here's Fraser. He took a mark. Okay, cool. Handball, cool. There's a plus five. Gave away a free kick. All right, that's not so good. But then another plus six later on. I'm like, okay, great. I've seen him for 2 minutes. He's got 11 points here. Awesome. I then looked down to see that his quarter score was 5 points in the third quarter. So he must have been giving away free kicks left, right, and center and not touched it until I sat down and watched him. So I don't know what was going on in that quarter, but that's just not good enough, Luke.
He always had an expiry date, and it might have just moved forward a little bit. Melbourne and Gold Coast, who was getting it done in this one?
Look, I hate to admit defeat, but Jake Bowie, he gets the best on ground with this one. Could have been someone eligible for the spongeable, because this man looks thirsty. Maybe it's because he's got red hair, and it just the heat from his head just, you know, makes him a little bit more, you know, thirsty and I don't know where I'm going with that.
I'm failing to see your logic.
But he, 98 points. The first half especially, he was on like 65, I think, at halftime. Just getting marks. Looked like one of Melbourne's best players. So he gets the best on ground from a fantasy point of view, because if you did go to him, you were very, very happy with that result.
Yep, definitely. And on the other end of the spectrum is Danny Rioli. You and I have never been huge on this one, but people who did pick Danny Rioli, not going to be happy with a 63. But just like we always say with him, he's had 20 touches.
Yeah, so 20 touches. I'm sure he did well for Richmond. I mean, not Richmond, for Gold Coast. For
other players that have 20
the
touches.
Richmond Suns.
You expect more, but not from Danny Rioli.
St Kilda versus Richmond. There was a lot of big scores in this one, but I'm going to give it to my boy, a man who I've never lost faith in, Hugo Garcia, 110, and he wasn't even on my field. I scored 2,000 points without this 110 on my field, Luke. Mate, he looked awesome.
He did look really good.
He looked really good.
I think the Jack Steele late out certainly helped him, but interestingly, absolutely, if you have a look at his TOG, it was still mid-60s.
66% still.
But I think he's that kind of player. You know, if you're hot, you're hot, and if you still do have him in your team, then you are rewarded now with a little bit of cash
generation. He surely doesn't move back to a vest. He's bought himself at least 2 weeks, right?
I think he probably has with the performance, but with Jack Steele back in, I still think it puts a
his
little
CBAs,
bit of
a... His CBAs did go up. Like he was definitely like a pure midfielder, essentially, but just with low time on ground.
It's one of those ones that's unfortunately he's not a trade-in, I don't think.
Yeah, I think he's a bit too late to get him in, but
if you were kissed enough to hold him, then... You're good. Hey, St Kilda and Richmond, you've given the flog to the commentators. You haven't explained this to me, but I'm going to guess. Because in this game, when...
I thought you'd get this.
When we were watching Jack Sinclair go off, the commentators identified perhaps the need for a tag, which we both thought as well.
Freddie could have seen that.
We thought, hey, can we tag this guy? And then after the commentators say that, their knee-jerk reaction is that the next person that stands anywhere in the vicinity of Jack Sinclair must be tagging him. So the commentators go, oh, we think that Steely Green's gone to Jack Sinclair and he's tagging him.
Yeah, they say, he's got the job on him and he's tagging him. And
you just have to watch for 2 minutes to realize that Steely Green is not actually tagging him. He just coincidentally was the player that stood next to him.
Yeah.
So the unfortunate thing for people watching from a fantasy lens is if they're maybe not watching that matchup closely and they hear that on the commentary, that's giving them false information
about
what's happening.
False information. Can we learn what a tag is? Like, people will stand next to people at stoppages or starting CBAs and things like that. But if someone is like Tuke Miller last year, not letting them breathe without being right next to them, that's a fucking tag.
Marcus Windhager had his way
with Tuke. Just running near a guy, that is not a tag. No. The Richmond did not give two shits about Sinclair racking up his 40 touches. So commentators, be better.
We all know fantasy coaches watch the players closer than 100%. Anyone. We should be on the coaching staffs.
There should be fantasy commentators. I will wave that flag until I'm blue in the face. Hawthorn versus GWS. Yep. I've given the best on ground here, not to the highest scorer in Lockie Whitfield, who was good, but I've given it to Lockie Ash, who was poor in round one, but he was someone that if you held, he rewarded you here with 100 points with 9 marks in a loss. I think this is positive signs because he's someone that I still think, whilst he's done the round zero tricking us before, I still think he did prevent some kind of value. And so holding him for the week, I think, will end up being the right call depending on how many other bullets you had to make. So 100 is a good way to repay the faith for those who did.
James Sicily, a little bit up and down, but 63 is not going to get it done. To be fair to him...
He didn't even go forward in this one.
No, but I mean, to be fair to him, it was very Marcus Windy Hager down there.
Hey, it didn't stop the GWS backs from getting up. Yeah, they had three top scorers.
Waxy boys. So, James Sicily, you can cop the flog in this one.
Yep, he does. Brisbane versus Geelong. My boy, safe as houses, Max Holmes gets the best on ground here. Just love the way he goes about it. He... Look, if I could give him one little tip, just lay a tackle now and again. But 29 touches, a goal, 9 marks. He played mid, he played wing, he played defense. I think even one time he came off the half forward line. Just absolutely everywhere. I think he could go to another level this year. I might have mozzed him in the last quarter where I sort of thought he might crack his 120 ceiling. He got the 119. But yeah, he gets the best on ground, matching it with Zorko, who obviously also had a good game, but was priced much cheaper.
The flog in this one doesn't go to a player, but to a coach, to a club, to a culture. Because...
A culture. Geelong summarizes it great.
Geelong's footballing culture is fantastic, but in terms of...
Fantasy culture?
In terms of team naming, laid outs, Geelong are horrendous. I heard something to the extent, I'll butcher this, but Chris Scott said something along the lines of, other teams, you know, prefer certainty to name their team up. We like to give guys the very best chance right until the last minute to prove their fitness. Don't want that, Chris. Please stop that. You're killing fantasy coaches. Tom Stewart holders were feeling good. Stewart was on the flight. He's probably sitting in fucking 1A, to be fair. He comes up here. He has a little yog around the Gabba, and they decide, you're good. Just spectate this one.
All their trickery, all their misdirection, what did it give them? They fucking lost.
They took the big fat L. Yeah. And in addition to that, a guy that we've been thinking is just locking his way into that side in Mitch Nevitt, you know what? They throw him the little sub and...
Nevitt again.
Nice. Yeah.
Nevitt again. I think that was a mistake. I could have named several other players that I'd rather start as the sub.
Could you throw the light onto? Yeah, I agree. I think there were at least two or three names that could have been the sub there. And the way Nevitt was performing, I think he had every right to be dirty that he was the sub.
Adelaide versus North Melbourne. Best on ground here. Finally. It was really only round two. But put a four-quarter performance. Isaac F1 Rankin. Maybe not F1. There's a couple of good forwards. But he's definitely top three or four. 116 points. Just looks... So comfortable out there as a midfielder. Finally put up a game where I think he had close to 70% CBAs. So the first couple of games he was at the 30% mark. One because he was resting forward late. The other one he got subbed out. But yeah, exactly 70% CBAs. Very toy rotation there over there, Adelaide, after that one. And he capitalized in a big way. 30 touches, 5 marks and 5 tackles. The midfielder, he's tough, mate. So he gets the best on ground.
Hey, he looks so good, and I'm absolutely filthy. I didn't start with him. The flog in this one is a mid price, or let's call him an underpriced premium, that has been looking the goods up until this point. And Tom Power was a little bit of a fizzle, as you were suggesting there. He and a couple of others as well. Who am I thinking of? GWS.
Sherry was a bit of a fizzle.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Finn Callahan. I'm thinking of Callahan, other guys in that bracket that fizzled this week.
So the mid price or the underpriced premium midfielders didn't really go well this week.
Perhaps the one that was meant to get the hardest tag of the lot.
Will Day. Yeah. Our scored them all, who was probably the one that a lot of people traded to players like Powell and Finn Callahan. So, yeah, a bit of a disappointing maybe first game for some coaches. The last game of the round, Fremantle versus Sydney. Best on ground, I'm giving it to Ryan Marrick, who, in a moment of need, took 9 kick-ins in this game, played on from all 9 of them. There's also an injury to McGovern, I believe. So he tunned up. And I want to say that is the first West Coast ton of the season. Actually, no, sorry. Exactly. Tim Kelly went 102 last week. So the second highest score of the season for West Coast, and only by 1 point. So he is going to ask some very good questions of fantasy coaches this week with a low break even and in our forward line. So he gets the best on ground.
Beautiful. The flog in this one is not super floggish, but Justin Longmuir put his stars on the bench maybe a little bit more than he would have if the game was closer. So Brayshaw had a couple of stints on the bench after copping a bit of a shoulder knock at early in the fourth quarter, and then Sarong spent a little bit of time on the bench when we thought maybe there were some ceiling scores on for him. I'll take the 110 from Brayshaw the way he's been performing.
Yeah, but so Brayshaw 64% time on ground in the last quarter and Sarong 69%. So look.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max 1 offer per account.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
It's a bit unfair. Hopefully that it repays us in the future when those guys do really well and avoids injury. But for now, it's we want a bigger scores.
Let's just get into some general chit chat, Mitch.
So I wanted to start here by reflecting on learnings, and I think there's some players here that we can use as examples for not panicking early. Early in the year, we started Tim English. Round one.
He's still been shit.
He still has been disappointing, but round one, he goes 77 or 73 or something like that. Terrible score. Tristan Sherry goes 129. 60 points difference. Next week, English outscores Tristan Sherry by 9 points. By 10 points or so. This week, Sherry puts up the 70, and English still goes to 99. Still not great. So their average is now only 8 points difference. When after 1 week, we were ready to trade English to a Tristan Sherry. Had we done that, we would have been behind every single week.
Yep.
Now we were only behind 1 week. Players like Tom Powell, Adam Chera, Will Day, some people would be saying, you know, you'd be in a much better position if you started Tom Powell or Adam Chera or Day. So far, they're sitting at 91, 98, 93 averages. I think that's going to basically all wash itself out, you know, in the end. And also in the defense, someone like a Max Holmes after round two, when he got tagged to a 77 and Sheasel had put up 2 tons, you know, there was, you know, I was deciding between those two players to start the year. Now after 3 rounds, there's 101, 102, so 1 point difference in it. So the lesson here and what I'm trying to get at is things can change very quickly, and to not throw the baby out with the bathwater when you've thought about these guys for the entire preseason comes down to one or two scores early on. These things can change very quickly, and there's still things that can change. So some 50-50 calls like Dawson versus Brayshaw, that's still yet to correct itself, but I do still think in the end, and maybe Dawson might average a little bit more, but it's not going to be the difference that it felt like after the first 2 rounds. Is sort of the lessons there. Is there any other examples here that you can sort of point towards? I know you're Rankin and Horn Francis is maybe your one over there. Yeah, hasn't corrected yet.
It hasn't corrected, and to be honest, I'm not sure it will. But I think the thing that you look at with all of these guys are the names that you mentioned as well. They're premiums or underpriced premiums, and they're all playing the role we expected them to
exactly.
play. So it's not like a guy like, let's say, Peatling, where we expected yep. him to play high CBA mids, and he didn't, like CBAs, he didn't. You move off that. You correct from that decision.
For sure.
But Tim English is playing number one ruck. Tristan Sherry's playing number one ruck. Let's just give it 3, give it 5 weeks just to let it settle out. There'll be unique cases where it doesn't, and maybe Horn Francis is just dog shit and Rankin's awesome this year. But the way I'm thinking of that one in particular is I expect over the course of the season, I still expect Horn Francis to be a top six forward. I'll bring in Rankin at some stage. He can also be a top six forward, but... like you say, if I flip on Francis to Rankin this week specifically, they could come out and do the opposite thing over the next 3 weeks, yeah. and I've just dug myself deeper.
And that's always been my thing with Will Day is he obviously didn't go well. I know some people are saying he's averaging closer to sort of 80. I think you still need to cut to, I know it doesn't count for our teams that 129 is scored in round zero. But these performances, we're in the business of trying to predict the future with our fantasy team. Like, you've copped the past, you've copped the stuff that's already happened. So those types of things I still think are useful to put into your toolkit to suggest, okay, what can this guy do? What could he be in the right role and the role he is playing? So I think it's an average is an average. There's good, bad, there's good scores, there's bad scores, there's everything in between. So sometimes, yeah, there is that little bit of patience required. But yeah, I think the point you made about the role is super important.
Let's talk trades in general. This could be one of those unique weeks where we endorse perhaps the double downgrade. Talk to us about that as a trading strategy this week.
Yeah, so as far as I'm aware, this sometimes can get a bit of a negative rap from other... smart people out there. I know. For example, Selby has said that he has never done in his winning seasons a double downgrade. Other podcasters will say, you know, to avoid the double downgrade where you can. But this, at times, has been a successful strategy that I've used in certain scenarios. And I think that this week could be one of those scenarios. The reason, I guess, let me present the argument of why you wouldn't do a double downgrade. By doing a double downgrade, you're not making your team necessarily better when it comes to a scoring point of view. The other thing is when you're doing a double downgrade, maybe you're stacking a whole lot of cash, and when that cash is kind of sitting on your bench, a lot of people will use the argument, okay, if you cop an injury or something like that, then maybe you're going to have that cash sitting on your bench for multiple weeks, and that can kind of hurt your team in that time as it is. The other thing is, a lot of times we're doing these rookie switches, or whether it's a red dot or someone who's been slow to this point, what's to say that that's not going to just switch over in the next week? You know, like there's rookie roulette, things that happen for a reason. For example, Levi Ashcroft was outscored by Luke Traynor by 20 points this last week. Not many of us would expect that to happen week to week. So there are some risks doing it. However, in a round like this where we're still, it's the last best 18 round, we're not quite at upgrade season yet, but we're close. So it could potentially set you up with enough cash to begin that upgrade cadence of the next few weeks. And we have some rookies that I think are coming through that present enough value and some potential job security along with that. They seem like the rookies you don't necessarily want to miss, and some of us might have a few red dots with some injuries to Lindsay, Lucas Camporeale, who's been dropped, Angus Haysu, who was a late in but still couldn't score too much. These sort of types of players that if you kind of don't trade them out now, you're kind of stuck with them for a while and just crossing your fingers they come back in and come good. What are your thoughts generally on the double downgrade before we get into specifically this week?
Yeah, previously, like you said, I think last year I had maybe 1 week where I double downgraded. The of the flags that you mentioned, the one that probably stands out to me is the injury risk associated with it the following week. If you have one injury, God forbid you have two injuries, you could be put in a particularly prickly spot, I think. I think the Lindsay injury helps the argument for a double downgrade potentially this week as well, because I think that's perhaps if he's 2-3 weeks away, it's a let's call it forced trade perhaps. So I think that if you had an idea of what you wanted to do with another trade, like let's say getting in a Bice or, you know, getting in a
Murray Erasmus.
Murray Erasmus. I think that you can... Yeah, nice.
Are we sticking with that?
Yeah, I'll run with it.
Let's go.
I think you can probably justify it.
I think the other thing, so to debunk the fear of the injury risk, if you have an injury and you have, let's say, 350K in the bank, I can only see that as a good thing because you might be able to fix your injury and then still make an upgrade the next season, the next week. Whereas if you make, you know, one down, one up, you get an injury, you might be forced that week to not be able to do an upgrade and just do that trade. I think the double downgrade is a far less appealing option during what would normally be upgrade season because you're now not upgrading when everyone else is. And even if you get enough cash to do a double upgrade next week, you're simply 1 week back in terms of a better score. Even if you equalize it the next week, you haven't equalized it and bettered it. You've kind of matched, right? So you're 1 week of a premium fewer scorers behind. So there's only certain times in the year where I do endorse the double downgrade. It is about this time, and it is usually also maybe that first week of the buy rounds as well when you are trading in players who are still yet to have their buys. So I think this is a time that if you wanted to do some bench hygiene and clean up, that you definitely can do it with the eye on, okay, I'm going to cash up now so that next week I can start that upgrade cadence, one up, one down every week.
Yeah. You're probably wanting to make sure that you pocket enough cash too. Because like you said, yeah, if you get an injury to a premium, you want to sideways them and you've only pocketed 150K from your double downgrade, you're not going to be able to upgrade that second player. So is it tough if you've got those rookies that have really stalled in cash and you're just kind of sidewaysing them effectively? You're not really making cash from that kind of double downgrade there.
Yeah, well, so let's put some names out there. So I think the quote-unquote, and I don't know if we're going to have legitimately must-have players anymore, but the quote-unquote must-haves now, Christian Moraes and Riley Bice are probably the two, I think they are the two most highly traded in players this week.
So you're talking about like must trade-ins rather than
trade-ins. Yeah, trade-ins. So these guys look like, you know, Moraes has got a negative 27 break-even. Bice is a player that, you know, looked good in his last game, scored a 35 in 31% time on ground, was touted. He's like a 24-year-old player, 280K in a defense line where we, you know, until this past week, you know, the rookies haven't been doing or faring too well. Are these guys the types of rookies that sort of make you feel like you really don't want to miss out? You know, maybe there is an upgrade option that you like. Are you worried that you're missing out on something big here with these guys? Or is it maybe, you know, there'll be other options later on?
Yeah, I think there's always going to be other options later on. I'm not afraid to miss out on either of these two guys. And if, like, I talk about my particular circumstance, I don't mind the idea of getting in Bice in the back line to finally shift off Taylor and then using that money to turn Hollands into Rankin with some DPP. Moraes' break even so low. If he goes out again and does what he did, he's going to make a heap of cash. But I've also got a heap of cash in the bank still after that trade. So if Lindsay is then out for a couple of weeks, if I were to do Lindsay next week to Moraes, I'm still going to make a little bit of money and then I can probably still do an upgrade with my trade because I've pocketed a little bit of cash already.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are going to be in that situation, particularly those of people who were like myself. Were you going to do it as well? I can't remember. But they were going to trade in Mitch Nevitt. And then... Well, you were trading him.
I was going to trade in Nevitt as well.
And so we both switched to the Warner trade. So that pocketed us, you know, an extra 150K essentially, which we weren't necessarily planning on have when making our original trade. So with a bit more money in the bank, we might have some more flexibility with some upgrades and things like that. So like you, I agree that I don't think these guys are players you can't afford to miss. I think in certain situations, it might be the best trade to make is double down, cash up, start your upgrades next week and from there do a one up, one down. But it will be depending on the priorities of trade outs that you have to get. Like I still think you said Hollands, if you've still got a Sam Taylor, if you've got someone like a James Peatling, Perryman, if you held and that sort of stuff, these guys have to go first because they're actively hurting your side. Whereas the rookie fix-ups, like, they're not helping your side, but they're not actively dragging it down. And you still got that hope at the back of your mind that maybe they could come back and start ticking over again. Of the two, do you have a preference? Do you think one's more of a priority than the other?
Just the way mine's working out, Bice is in the line that I need to shift Taylor.
It's more a positional thing.
So
there,
that,
right?
For me, that's more positional. But of the two of them, I probably liked what I saw from Moraes better.
I think I agree as well. I think Moraes... I think he has better job security.
Moraes is also, I would think, going to go up more in cash this week. So if you were going to get one this week, one the next, you're probably better off getting...
He's the more expensive one at the moment as already. Well. So Bice might be still a trade target next week. Moraes might price himself out of it. So yes, I do agree. I think if you're going to go for one and position isn't maybe necessarily a big deal because some of us might be trading Bice into the utility spot or something like that as well because, you know, some of the rookies in the defense haven't done... too wrong. You know, Reed, Trainer, Pryor all put up 70 pluses this past week. So we're not in any desperation to trade out those guys. I think you could definitely look to do that. There are also some other, what I would call non-traditional downgrades, potentially putting their hand up this week. Namely, Ryan Marek, who put up that ton for the West Coast Eagles with his 9 kick-ins, with McGovern potentially missing some time. He is, I want to say, 400 and... what is he? Why are there so many Ryans? Ryan Marek, $492,000. So nearly $500,000. Price at about 50. Is he someone that could we entertain either a Sanders or maybe if you're absolutely sick of him, someone like a Horn Francis down to him, make some cash, someone else can go up? What are your thoughts on that sort of a trade?
This one feels a little bit dirty to me. That's very expensive for a guy that we're probably still speculating on. And like I said before, if you downgrade from him, even if it is from a Sanders, you're not making like an enormous amount of cash. Kind of who are you going to put it on the head of? And if you do a double downgrade, like we were talking about before, that includes one of these guys, are you going to generate enough cash to do that double upgrade that you might want to do the following week? So I personally am probably going to steer clear of these guys. I think they're... at the price, it's hard to pick a guy that's that expensive that is still, in my mind, a little bit speculative.
Yeah, so to make a comparison, for example, so he's priced at 50. Riley Bice is priced at 20. Let's call it 29. What do we think Maric can do? So I think Bice, for example, could be 60. That makes him basically 30 points unders. Do you think Ryan Maric can average 80? He has gone 31. Admittedly, he was the sub that game. So decent points per minute. Then he goes 74 and 101. Now, the 101 had a lot of kick-ins. McGovern goes down. So there is a world where he averages 80, and that is 30 points unders. And I think that's a solid pick. And if you can go Sanders down to him, I think you could be potentially making points as an upgrade.
Sanders has saved his score essentially through. Not saved it, but he's not in the right role and he's just giving us a score that means he just kind of hangs around a little bit, doesn't he?
Which I don't love those kind of players. So I don't mind that. I think he might have better job security, but it's much easier for a player priced at 28 to average 60 in most cases. Whereas I think going from a Horn Francis... that to me seems a bit reactive.
You're cashing in a big loss there as well, aren't you?
Yeah, I think you are. I think you're going down to a worse scorer. So the upgrade on the other end better be super worth it at that sort of a point. And a lot of times we can just sort of get a rookie downgrade in that instance alone. Some other players that are maybe a bit more unconventional. Daniel Curtin, who has put together a couple of really good games the last two. Archer Reed as a ruck cash generator. And Ted Closey, who... we had some discussions on last week. He ended up not being the sub, but only came on a score of 44. Still has a low break even, but a little bit more expensive now. Any of those guys catch your eye as potential options, maybe outside of the big two in Bice and Moraes?
After what Geelong did with Nevitt, the Closey pick just seems harder and harder to pick.
Yeah, I agree.
It's so hard to trust. And if a guy like Mitch Nevitt, who we thought was performing really well is sub-eligible, then Closey could be week to week as well.
Yeah, he's just too Closey to the sub vest.
Yeah, good call. And Dan Curtin, I mean, he's coming into a run of reasonable matchups, but the role that he's playing currently is also relying on Adelaide doing super well, I think.
Yeah, he's kicked 3 goals of the last 2 games.
So we expect Adelaide to continue doing well, but when you're now paying 400K for him, can you expect that week to week if they come into a tougher matchup? Reed, I haven't looked at. Are you talking about Archer Reed?
Archer Reed, yeah, that's the one. He put up a 64. I think the thing here is that he's a ruck making cash, and a lot of us have Boyd. Yeah, Boyd sitting there who's not. I just, these little sideways shuffles, like he scored 230s prior to this game. I couldn't do that just for the sake of having a green dot. Just remember, after this round, I'm going to want one red dot. I'm not going to want 30 green dots because we'll be out of that best 18, out of the blue dots there. So I'm going to want that as a loophole. And if that's Harry Boyd, that's Harry Boyd. You know, it is what it is. So I don't think it's worth the shuffle across to Archer Reed in that instance.
Hey, mate, you ready to go kung fu fighting?
Let's chop. Everybody was kung fu
fighting. Pretty good. We're getting better every week.
All right, let's chop some players out. Look, there's a lot of similar names here, but like we did last week, we're gonna list some of the top priorities. Harry Perryman is still there at number one for whatever reason. Whether it may be you went for the emergency score on the was it Zach Reed? The 83, like you were selling, and you held him because of that, and maybe he had some other things you could do. He's got to go. His role is, I don't think, is going to come back anytime soon. Ollie Hollins. I know a lot of people are talking about Hollins, keeping him over Day. Well, you've kept him now. You've got one more week to confirm that he is bad. He has to go. I put here red dot rookies if you have 3 or more. I think that is starting to get to be too much.
Yep.
I would want to be starting to tidy that up. I think that is a priority. But I honestly still would probably trade out Perryman and Hollins. I didn't put Peatling on the run sheet here, but he and Hollins, I think, are one and the same sort of thing. I know Peatling had a better score this round, but the role is not what we want. So he and Hollins can go as a sort of a link. Sam Taylor, I still have there. Now, his break-even's right up at 60 now. I suppose that's an interesting one. Sam Taylor versus a red dot rookie if you have 3 or more. Who do you prefer to trade? Because I think you might be in this situation. Is that right?
I don't have more than 3 red dot rookies. Okay. But Sam Taylor, you would think, based on his break-even, is basically you've absolutely juiced the shit out of him. He's got a 57 break-even, and if he goes over that, you're just absolutely laughing. So I think he's kind of fully priced now. I was just playing around with the Bice versus Moraes in, if I'm going to pick one of them. Maybe getting Moraes in, given he's more expensive, he's likely to go up more cash than what Bice is this week. Mm. Can I ditch a Lindsay early and then maybe just hold Sam Taylor for one more week and then do the Taylor to Bice thing next week?
You could. It depends on... I mean, Taylor, even if he loses a bit of cash, like...
If the difference it's between what Moraes and Bice makes is like 40K, I don't think Sam Taylor's going to cover that anyway.
Yeah,
I don't know if he's going to lose 40K. So
yeah, potentially,
so you might have to just have a look at the break evens.
You're treating Sam Taylor like a rookie now.
Yeah,
he's like a rookie who's maxed out in cash. He's not on your field. You're looping him. You know, you want to get him out, but maybe you've got some other priorities. So he is there, but I think maybe the other red dot rookies, they're not doing anything. I'd probably get rid of those guys as well. And then I've also, in this last little top priorities bracket, I've got Riley Sanders. Now, he's at the lowest end of this one, but I do think if you have the luxury, he'd be someone I'd be very keen to move on because he is starting to become that player that is, like you said, just doing enough to not be the top priority. But if you have the chance, I would want to trade him out. His role is not there. He is saving his scores, per se, in some big quarters. And that doesn't come around, and when we get back to the best 22 rounds, like he's scoring like a rookie. Mm. Like, what is the difference between him and Max Hall?
Yeah.
Like, there is virtually no difference. So, structurally, I think moving him on to someone else, maybe with a bit of DBB to a midfielder, I think makes a lot of sense. So, anyone in there that you would disagree with, or anyone you think I've left out of the top priority trade outs there, Luke?
Talk to me about Sam De Koning. So, subbed in their loss to Brisbane up here in the moist weather. Do you think that that was just more based on they wanted to just get a bit of speed around the ball and it was obviously wet weather? Is there something to that? He obviously played a combination of ruck and he went back a little bit. Is he a guy with an expiry date? And sort of when do you see that expiry date coming?
He is. He falls in my next priorities bracket. So he is someone that you definitely could trade him out. I just think a lot of those other guys, I'd trade him first. His break even is 54. And even when he was subbed out, he covered that. He scored 66 points. Now, he's coming up against Max Gawn. A lot of people are going to be concerned that maybe Rhys Stanley comes in. Now, he wasn't named an emergency. Geelong have lost the last two games. So it wouldn't surprise me if they switch things up. I do think the reason he was subbed was because of the weather and, you know, yeah, just get a tall out and put a small back in there and change things up a bit that way. But he is going to be someone that in the next 2 to 3 weeks we're going to want out of our side. I think for most teams, especially because what I'm forecasting with some of the defenders, Tom Stewart didn't play. It would be nice if Tom Stewart played this weekend because his price would have dropped. But Tom Stewart's going to play this week, we expect. He's going to drop down in price with his huge break even. I'm also expecting Callum Mills to be back soon as well. And so I think if we can maybe just hold the trigger a little bit, Sam DeConing to one of those two players will be a nice affordable upgrade to make. Whereas I think the other options to trade in are more in the mid and forward lines this stage. But
yep,
definitely someone we're going to want to trade out soon.
Can you luxuriously trade Will Day on his bye now? It's weird if you held for last week's tag then to trade him straight away. He comes
yeah,
into a
you're
good
really
run.
Flirting with danger there. I think, I mean, you can. I will not be. So I've held him. I will be holding him again, and I'm going to basically hold him for the next six rounds at least because I want to experience that good run that he's got coming up. He is still priced, I think, about 10 to 15 points under what he can do. So for someone like that on your buy, like, you know, we didn't trade out Roberts on his buy. Like these kind of players, I don't think are necessarily your priority trade outs. Hopefully we get another 125 from a rookie on your bench and there's no points lost there at all. Maybe you can outscore the what Will Day would have done anyway. So I think the logic would say if you held last week, you're in it for the long haul. So I'd put him down on my priority list. The interesting other discussion here is if you have one or two red dot rookies, I don't think you're in any urgent position to be trading those guys out. Do you agree, disagree? Some people are still very keen on 30 green dots this time of year.
Yeah, well, like you said before, I think come next week, we're all going to probably want at least one to be looking at our VC loops. Maybe that's Harry Boyd for you, but I think if you've got a Boyd, and for me, I've got a Boyd and a Camporelli, and I'm happy with that for now. I think that there's my team anyway has bigger priorities, and I expect that most teams will have bigger fish to fry as well.
Of the red dots, who do you think's the urgent? Let's talk about Xavier Lindsay at this point here, because
what's the reporting on?
So the reporting is he's got a medial MCL sprain. I tried to dig around to find a grading of it. I saw one source somewhere saying it was a grade one, which is a 1 to 3 week recovery. If it's a grade two, it's more like 4 to 6 weeks. If it's a grade three, it can be surgery. I think he's avoided the grade three. The wording seems positive. 1 to 3 weeks. I think if it's one, you can absolutely hold. He was looking like the best rookie that we had.
Yeah.
His price still went up 21K. He's at 459K, break even now of 37. My small concern is they would be in no rush to bring him back in.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't think it's going to make a whole lot of difference to their season. And if you're looking at a gun rookie that you want to be at your club for a long time, I don't think you rush him back and get him re-injured.
And they started Langford in the sub vest in round one, and he's another one of their prized rookie recruits.
Yeah.
Could they do something with like that to Xavier Lindsay, his first game back, starting in the vest, warming back up into it? Is that a potential risk?
I think it is. And the other thing too is if you're holding and others don't, and you think that he's going to come back and you're just going to see those like 70K increases anymore, unfortunately, because that low scores in his rolling price cycle now as well, you're not going to immediately see those massive cash increases, even if you do hold for a couple of weeks' time. So I think because he's got a lot of cash on his head, if the difference between you doing what you want to do on the other end is moving him versus moving, let's say, like a Camporeale or something like that, I think you can be justified in moving him on.
I agree. At this stage, I think it is unlikely. I think it's more likely he misses two than he misses one. And I think even if when he does come back, I think either one of a green or red vest is definitely on the cards. With that being said, I think it's totally fine to hold him if you can make the trade you want with the other guys. Like you just said, if I could make the same trade, and doesn't matter if I trade out Lucas Camporeale or I trade out Lindsay, I'd trade out Camporeale. I'd trade out Hasty if I could do the same trades. But I might be in the situation where I'm going to trade out Lindsay because I need that extra 100K than some of those guys. And I think it's okay to pull the trigger early on these guys, even if they were really good. You know, especially if you're in my position where you started him. He's made 150K for my team. That's fine. He might still make another 150, 200K in the long run, but it's about that opportunity. We want to start to make these moves. What about if you're splitting hairs between Camporeale and an Angus Hasty? Who goes first out of those guys?
Well, at least Hasty played on the weekend, and if you've got a red dot that you can use anyway. The other thing with Camporeale, keep in mind, he plays the first game, so he's essentially useless from a looping perspective. So if your decision comes down to you've already worked out that you can get your upgrades with either and you're really splitting hairs, then I would have a look at who's going to be useful for looping purposes on their line and when their game time is on the weekend.
Carlton seem to often have early games in the rounds as well. So
it's because the AFL thought they'd be good.
Yeah, they were wrong. I think I agree. Hasty, I don't know. He didn't impress, but at least there is that injury to the other. Is it O'Connell? There from the Saints, maybe he gets another week to prove his worth to the team. So I think I would agree, Camporeale, at least just has a little bit more money on his head. But we'll wait and see. Maybe he's back this week.
Okay, we've talked trade out or choppers. Butchered that, didn't I? We've talked
out choppers.
Let's talk about some trade-ins, hey?
We're going to look, I think, at some discounted premiums now. I think the time of the mid-pricer has come and gone. Before I get into the discounted premiums, let me ask you this question. Is it too late for someone like Nathan O'Driscoll? Price basically at 600,000 now.
He scored that 90 with zero CBAs, I'm pretty sure it was. I told you he could score, mate. You're lucky for me. Your team would be shit.
Yeah.
All my good picks, I recommend.
Yeah, that's all you, bro. He's priced at 61. I think he might still have a little bit of value.
Who from? Who are you going from?
Maybe it is a Hollins. Is Hollins still down to him? Is that still making you cash?
Barely.
I'd much rather him than Hollins in my side, but I think there might be better options. Are there any other mid prices that you could sort of point to and go, we need to have this guy as a cash generator, but also a point scoring option? I can't think of many.
No, I think, like you said, the ship has kind of sailed because any of those guys that you've initially thought of as mid-prices have now either done their job or not done their job, and we've made moves accordingly. So,
yep.
Yeah, I think it's more like you're looking for rookies, and then you're looking for those underpriced premiums that can take the next step.
I agree. So my number one trade target with that in mind is Isaac Rankin. He is simply undervalued. I think he is a guaranteed top six option. 107, 70 in 50% time on ground, got the rest in that one. And then 116 comes up against Gold Coast and the Geelong Cats in the next two games. So two nice matchups. And I just think that he's a guy. What do you think he can average for the season? I think he could go 100.
Yeah, I was conservative on him in the preseason, and it was to do with all those Adelaide mids, but he's easily now, I would say, their second best mid from a pure class perspective and what he can do to the game, just behind Jordan Dawson in my mind anyway. And I think that they're now playing him like he is that. So yeah. I'm going to be trading him in this week at this stage.
Yeah, so he's priced at 88. I think you've got clearly 10 points of upside there, maybe a smidge more. So I like him as a bona fide keeper with a bit of value. The next guy that I've got here is Andrew Brayshaw.
Oh, no, you don't. One decent week.
I think for the, all the reasons that I started with him, he is now priced cheaper. He's priced at 102.5. That could potentially be 10 points unders. And he's got a good run coming up. I have no worries about his role. There are excuses for his first couple of matchups. He got tagged in round one, was still the highest score for Frio. Mark O'Connor went to him. Round two against Sydney, that's been a tough matchup. That was always a tough matchup. I think he is still the guy that I expect him to be. And I know some people like to wait, but priced at 102, why not go on Andrew Brayshaw now?
He's a guy that tackles and marks, but are you concerned? Yeah. So he had one mark on the weekend, the previous week, two marks, and then I'll just check against Geelong.
One
mark. That's four marks in 3 weeks is very un-Andrew Brayshaw.
Yeah, look, I think there might be a bit of a directive for Fremantle to be handballing it, maybe kicking long down the line a bit more than the past. So maybe that does take a little bit of ceiling off him. Potentially. Could that just have been the matchups that they've played so far? It is hard to tell. If he's going to get marks, he's going to get them against Western Bulldogs and then Richmond in the next 2 weeks.
You would expect. So trading in for the good matchups.
I think you've just got a player here who he's gone down a little bit of coin. I thought he was value at the start of the season. Nothing's really... He's down 68K, and I thought he was value. I don't think that anything's changed in his role. So, as someone who's worn the poor scores, I think he's definitely someone you could look to bring in. As is the next guy here, Tom Green. And I don't think he's going to get a lot of chatter this week, but I think he is definitely someone we don't want to forget about. The interesting thing that happened last week is the tag didn't go to him from Hawthorn. It went to Callahan. And he scored 91 against Hawthorn, which are his hardest team to score against by far. So far, he's put up 104 against Melbourne after coming back from that calf tweak in the preseason. Only played 76% tog. Back to 85% this week after their bye. Super high CBAs. He did his thing where he handballed the ball a million times. Comes up against West Coast and St Kilda in his next two. I think there's definitely a chance for a ceiling score this week. He is very similar price to Andrew Brayshaw at 103, I want to say his price stat figure is. Yeah, 103 on the dot, 1,010,000. What are your thoughts on Tom Green? I know we've been haters on this podcast before.
Yeah, we definitely have been haters. I like that idea of the tag going elsewhere. And
is that something we can expect?
That's what I mean. I'm not sure that we can expect it from here on in. Obviously, Callahan looked really good in the first couple of games, so I can see why the Hawks said, hey, we want to shut that down. But I just don't know whether that is a consistent thing. The other thing that's always the flag for Tom Green is he can have 35 touches and it can be a 90 because he hand passes so much. And if the marks and the tackles just aren't there for whatever reason on that week, you can get some stinky scores from a premium. So, look, he's in your trade plans early this week, I think. But
he's definitely among consideration because I do think that he is someone that the role is unquestionable. He is someone, like, I know you said he can have 35 touches and score 90, but getting 35 touches every week is a good thing. And he led the league in disposals, I think, last year. There's no reason he can't go close to doing that again. Has a nice matchup to start this week. It's just a different name, and I think he'll be very lowly owned. Not that I think we should care about that too much at this stage, but I do think that he is an underpriced top eight potential premium that you can get at a discount now, and it might be the cheapest you can get him for a little while. So he is definitely on the radar in the midfield. And the last one, and a third midfielder, I had him a bit higher up in my trade targets last week, Adam Chera. He's fallen down a little bit. He was kind of in that mid-priced bracket last week. I'm going to call him an underpriced premium now. I know he didn't score great, but I still have liked what I've seen from Adam Chera. He got stuck on the bench again, but he is still a guy priced. I think just he might have ticked over the 800,000. But he's a guy that I think can go 95 and he's priced about 85. So about 10 points of upside there. And the Carlton still have a very good run. Collingwood, West Coast, North, Geelong in the next four.
Three out of four of those look pretty good.
North Melbourne being
North being a little bit harder.
Yeah. But he's never going to be a guy that gets a tag. And when tags are sort of back in vogue at the moment, I think that is a positive for him. 75-73% in his last two. I know some people will be frustrated with him, but I still think that he is potentially a guy that at 816K can maybe get close enough that you can maybe hold through to his buy.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair.
Anyone else that you sort of are eyeing off, maybe... I know a lot of us traded in defenders last week. Any other defenders you think off the back of this weekend? The only thing about those guys, I don't know if there's anyone who's of serious value down in defence, and that's typically what we're looking for at this time of year.
Yeah, and those St Kilda boys, obviously, you've taken that sugar hit in the Richmond matchup. You've missed that, so I wouldn't sort of advise going to chase it. But we do have a few guys that you've mentioned here that are kind of coming down the line, and one of those is Tom Stewart, who's a defender option.
Yes.
So, like I said, if you can maybe hold off on that kind of movement in your defence this week, maybe next week, then we can start looking at what Tom Stewart looks like and then what Callum Mills looks like when he comes back in as well.
Yeah, so I want to finish the podcast today by just highlighting some names that maybe it's not this week, but we're definitely putting them on our radar to go, okay, these guys are going to be cheap soon. And we're going to try and look at them as trade targets. So potentially getting some of those other guys we mentioned before with an eye on some of these guys in the next few weeks. Starting with the two defenders, like I mentioned before, Callum Mills and Tom Stewart. What do you need to see from Callum Mills? If he's named this week and he's back in there, is it just he's in the midfield, he's in? What sort of... because he's still priced in the high 70s.
Yeah.
It's a stone's throw away from a Frazier or a SDK.
Yeah, and if he's playing midfield, then there's no disputing his scoring potential, and you feel a lot better having the name Callum Mills in your back line than you do Frazier or SDK. So I think
you're not launching before you've seen a game, though.
No,
right?
I'm definitely seeing a game. Yep. I'm definitely having a look. I want to look at the role, and obviously have a bit of a look at the score as well. But that's one that's going to be high on everyone's radar. I don't think that's a secret.
Nick Dacos is probably also one that's not much of a secret after having that 60 in round zero. The thing that makes him a wait for me is that he has a couple of tougher matchups in his next two or three. So he goes Carlton, Sydney, Brisbane. So I think definitely in that Sydney game, he's going to get a tag from Jordan, and he might just get a bit of attention from the other two teams and in not easy matchups. So I don't think there's a rush to get him in. His break-even is still high. Some other mids... Sam Walsh, Isaac Heaney are two guys with high break-evens. Do you like either of those players as potential targets? For example, Heaney's got a 131 break-even. He's going to be priced below a million after a week's time. And Walsh also has a break-even of 131, and he will also be in the 900,000s after this next week. Collingwood, West Coast in his next two.
Yeah, Heaney I'm not as big on. I don't necessarily think last season was just a flash in the pan because Isaac Heaney's an absolute jet, but I think that obviously now we can't pick him as a forward. And the other thing is that they're just going to be bending over themselves to give Chad Warner all the ball so we can
sign
on the dotted line.
Yeah, I think there's more moving pieces for Heaney because you've also got Mills to come back in. Yeah. and things like that. New coach, so perhaps the change in his scoring is maybe something that's not just poor form. There might be other factors there. Walsh, another interrupted preseason.
Yeah, but it's always the story with him, is it? Like, he's a proven scorer and he's about to go on a very good four-game run, same as Adam Chera, of course, but it's just always the back of your mind is the injury and the...
Yeah.
Yeah,
he had 38% CBAs in round one, then 74 and 65 in the last two, which is a bit more what we want to see. I think I'd need him to get a decent amount cheaper. At the moment, he is priced at... Where is old Walshy? 102. I think if he gets around to that 95 priced out figure, you're definitely starting to have a look.
Stats are all over the shop for him as well. Like, he's had, in three games, he's had two marks. And Carlton's ball movement has been just hard to read. You and I are saying that watching that sometimes they look like headless chooks. They kick long, or it's just... Yeah. They don't know what they're doing. And even like against Hawthorn, he had 12 tackles to get to his score of 99. If Sam Walsh has 12 tackles, you want a 150.
Yes, and he's got two marks in his three games. So.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. So it's just, it's a little bit all over the shop at the moment for Walsh and probably also for Carlton.
I want to throw a name up there, which I don't think many people will be too enthusiastic at the moment. However, Tim Taranto. He's been poor to start the season, 81 average. We did flag in the preseason. Their run to start the year was tough. Yep. Unfortunately, they don't get to verse themselves, which is the major negative for any Richmond player. Carlton, Port, St Kilda. So he's gone 89, 70, 84. I believe he was even tagged in the St Kilda game by Windhager, at least for a portion of the game. Has the Lions this week, so I'm probably not launching in straight away. But after that, Frio, Gold Coast, Melbourne, Hawthorn a tough matchup, and then West Coast. So four out of the five after that, I would say, are positive matchups. How cheap would he have to get? Because he's nearly 800,000. He might be, in a week or two's time, cheaper than Chera.
Yeah, it's very, very cheap for a guy with scoring potential. But there's almost that thing in the back of your mind that goes, well, why is it going to change? Because Tim Taranto's, I know the matchup does make a difference, but Tim Taranto's a guy that you would expect can score points and have a high floor against pretty much anyone. He's playing a role where I don't think personally you're going to tag him because he's a paddle foot. And he can get in, he can tackle, he can like scrub kicks off the ground. So to me, it's a question, well, why is he not scoring well? And until I can answer that question, I'm probably not willing to just say that it's the tough matchups.
I think if we start to see more marks from him, I will be more encouraged. He's only had two marks in the first couple of games. And I think Richmond haven't yet resorted to the full chip the way I expect them to do.
That's been the tough thing with owning Short as well, because I think Short would be giving us more than 80s and 90s if they were waxing a little bit and if he was taking kickouts. And that was originally my reason for being hot on Tim Taranto, was maybe he would get in on a bit more of a possession game. But I think Adam Uze's just got them playing fast footy, take them on.
Maybe that first win was maybe a little bit of a, I don't know, like a fool's gold.
They've looked better than I thought in the first 3 weeks. So I think that there's a chance that they stick with taking it on and playing fast footy, which is not good for Tim Taranto, I don't think.
Last player I'll talk... Oh, sorry, two more players I want to talk about here, not in the midfield. The first in our ruck line, Kieran Briggs. Yeah. He is going to be going down cash. He dropped a lot of cash this past week, put up an 80, dropped 63,000. Break-even is still at 138. He does have West Coast this week, which will be a very nice matchup. When are we looking at Briggs, and from who are we looking at Briggs?
Yeah, this one is like, it's an obvious one. If Briggs was on another line, he's a guy that's got proven scoring. He's going to drop down. He's going to be value at some point. But the, like you say, the tough thing is on what line, because is from where? Because if you've got English, Sherry, Marshall, Gorn, yes, you can make a cash grab here, but are you potentially putting yourself in a prickly situation with how you then get back to one of those premiums? Because we know we're going to have to own them at some point.
This is where I never like to do my downgrade, when I'm going to a player who I expect to score less than the player that I'm trading him in from. So yes, okay, I might go from, let's call it Max Gorn down to him. I'll make $200,000. Maybe $250,000, but I'm also probably going to lose 10 to 15 points per game. So there are other ways to get $250,000 that doesn't cost you 10 to 15 points on your field. So I think Kieran Briggs is just someone to have in the back of mind in case maybe it is someone like a Tristan Sherry, his hamstrings don't pull up okay, or if someone, we get unlucky with an injury or something like that, he's someone that we can go to in that injury scenario, or if you've gone a bit left of field with your ruck choices and you've got someone that is maybe another speculative mid-pricer pick that hasn't worked out.
Here's one I reckon,
go there.
Here's one that I reckon perfectly fits the bill. If you've got Luke Jackson, you're doing well at the moment. Luke Jackson's
performing. He was the choice at R2, essentially.
Yeah, so if you've got him, but you know there's the expiry date.
There is,
so the minute that comes along,
Darcy comes in,
you pull the trigger, and if it's at the right time to get over to Briggs, do you know when... Darcy's
I think back. Darcy might be 1 or 2 weeks away, but I'm not 100% sure if he's going to come straight back into the AFL. Maybe they give him a run in the in the waffle, but
if he was in at Freo in 2 weeks' time, I'd almost be willing to pull the trigger and get off Luke Jackson I'd even seen it.
I could definitely see that. Is Luke Jackson, what's his price at the moment?
90 or something.
Okay, so yeah, you're making cash there.
And you'll make even more cash because his break even's like 60 in Briggs's.
Because when that flip happens, you're actually improving scoring, I think, in that situation. That's that double win where you're making cash and getting a better scorer in that position as well. So I like that shout. The last one in here, maybe this is just a jab at you, but Jason Horne Francis. At what point, I know some people are getting frustrated, maybe want to trade him out. I'm starting to think, all right, when is the point I'm going to trade him in?
Don't bother.
I don't think it's yet, but...
Don't ever.
He is coming down. He's down now at price at 85. Where have I got him here?
Oh, God, don't tell me.
He's priced, 85.7. I don't think there's anything changed that he couldn't go back to his 90, which he averaged last year. Look, maybe he's not going to be the value pick we thought he was going to be, but a couple more subpar scores, he's going to be cheap enough that I think you can launch into.
He's coming into a tougher fixture. So he goes St Kilda this week.
Does he like it tough?
But he goes, well, this is what I'm going to try and just justify to myself in my head. But then he goes Hawthorn, Sydney, North Melbourne. Not great for mids. But I'm going to say, well, if you don't like it easy, there's only one other option.
Yeah.
Maybe you like it rough. But if I'm a trade-in, if he doesn't score well against St Kilda this week, you're not trading in for Hawthorn, are you? You're not trading
probably
in for Sydney. You're not trading in for North.
I reckon maybe that North or Western Bulldogs matchup.
Yeah, he goes Western Bulldogs, Adelaide, Geelong, Freo. So 3 out of 4, not bad going into his bye.
This is more just to say, for people who have him, if you're worried and you want to trade him out, the people who don't have him more than likely will be looking at him and going, when am I trading him in?
Yeah.
So I think it's just a reminder to say, these types of players, you might as well save yourself a trade. It probably was a bad decision to start them, but don't compound that by making another bad decision to trade him out when his price is down. So
yes,
he is going to be someone that we are probably going to be looking at. But the other thing with Horne Francis is I want to potentially have a look at some DPPs come round 6. So I did get confirmation from the big man himself, Warney, to say, despite Gold Coast and Essendon missing an extra game, we will get it after the end of round 5. So that's only 2 rounds away. And there are some potential options in like a Petrarca or a Warner or some of these guys that if they come in, then maybe there is that question, is Horne Francis a top 6 little bit more valid?
Especially with a guy like Jai Simkin putting his hand up.
Yeah.
He's probably a guy we should have given some more airtime as well.
So I think in a perfect world, you'd wait till after those DPPs are announced before you trade into a Horne Francis is my sort of thinking there.
Yeah, no, fair call. We've already taken too much of people's time, so I reckon we let them go, eh?
The better we do in the weekend, the longer our podcast goes. So
feeling ourselves.
Yeah, when we do shit, we want to wrap this shit up quickly. So thank you very much, guys. Head over to patreon.com/ballboys to join our Patreon, get your exclusive questions answered on our Q&As on a Wednesday night. Get your ball boys and trade targets and like this video, hit subscribe, and we'll catch you guys on Friday. Bye.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max 1 offer per account.